Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show. And it's time for Eyes Wide Open with Janessa and SJ. Let's bring them on to reintroduce themselves, their show, and what's up for today.
Hello, and welcome to Eyes Wide Open. We are multifaceted beings living in a multidimensional existence, and we hold the power of perception. This power alone paints our reality. Perception influences the things we see and the things we don't see. Together, we'll explore the mystical and the material, the metaphysical and the physical, the supernatural and the concrete, the seen and the unseen. Hi, I am one of your hosts, Janessa Finley Ford. I'm an empowerment coach who helps my clients turn obstacles into opportunities, setbacks into success, trials into triumph as they master the art of being human. And I use these little tricks in my toolbox of energy psychology, mindset alignment, and functional medicine. And we are going to talk about conscious conflict and how we can create connection today. But before we get into it, I'll let SJ introduce herself.
My name is Esther. I'm a certified crystal healer and shamanic earth and energy medicine practitioner, marrying together the old ancient wisdom with new age ideas like quantum physics. I'm so excited to get into today's topic because I feel like it's something that we get to experience and work with every single day. And to intro this funny story, my daughter, who is 5, is pretty good at conscious conflict, I feel like. She had a substitute teacher who had, there's a little boy in her class that has a more difficult time with, you know, behaviors that are acceptable. And he was having one of his episodes and the substitute teacher raised her voice and said, "Oh my gosh, you're so bad. This is so terrible and so naughty." And my daughter in her 5-year-old infinite wisdom said, "Whoa, actually, he just needs help managing his emotions." And we should never tell people they're bad. So I think it's a beautiful example of how even children can utilize these concepts of conscious conflict.
That's such a good story. I love her. She's such an incredible little soul. And I love her. Wait, I think she gets this from her mama. Like, the willingness to just, from the mouth of babes, right? Speak her truth, express herself, and stand up for what she felt like was not appropriate treatment with no care that that's coming from an adult. So I don't know if I would have that audacity all the time in my adulthood. I know actually in reflecting, I didn't always. Sometimes speaking out would be challenging. Sometimes showing up in conflict would make me cringe. And so before we get into some tips about conflict and how to turn that into creating connection, I think it's really important to talk about conflict in itself and consciousness. What is conscious conflict? What is it that we're talking about? What does that phrase mean? And then also examining, how does conflict make you feel? What are your thoughts and beliefs around conflict? Is that something where you thrive? Is it something you move away from? For those of you who listen to us regularly, you already know the Enneagram, and personality is a part of this conversation because we have the personalities that really feel like conflict is where all of the good stuff happens and that's how you solve things. We're just going to go straight to conflict. And then we have the other personality types that are dying on the inside when they experience conflict, and they will avoid conflict at all costs, especially
Enneagram 9, which was how I naturally picked that up. And then, you know, even wanting to, like, hedge, is the conflict worth it? Maybe a little white lie wouldn't be so bad right here, right now, because the conflict just, it's not worth the energy or the time, and it's not that big of a deal. And then we start moving away from the principles of truth and light and love, because deceit never yields connection in the end. And so conscious relationships are always going to show you what is yours to heal. So relationships where you're truly showing up with the other person, wanting to, I want to try to not use too much Enneagram 1 language, but of course it's what's, you know, most natural for me. Wanting to grow, wanting to be a little bit better every day, wanting to really expand and live your own but parallel path and growth. That is what I consider a conscious relationship. And when you're in that type of relationship, it's most certainly going to result in you being activated or triggered. It's going to show you what is yours to heal, what is yours to address, and it's going to lead to some level of conflict. Now, what that conflict looks like will be different for everyone, whether it's raised voices, you know, like a lot of tension, a lot of drama, it lasts for a long, long time. This used to be my definition of conflict. And so this is where what I had mentioned in the intro around, you know, what is your belief system around conflict? And you might have to deconstruct and reconstruct your belief about conflict alone to even be able to show up and have conscious conflict. So if your belief is something similar to mine, and you think that it, well, like Webster's Dictionary also defines it as clashing, a dragged out disagreement, a serious offense. That doesn't sound like a lot of fun, does it?
No.
And so what's your definition of conflict?
Conflict for me is when you are fighting about something with no intent of resolution. Do you see the very
not
perspective?
Very
yeah, very yes. Unconscious. Yes.
So for me, I chose to deconstruct my definition of conflict and reconstruct it around opportunity. Like, there may be a disagreement, that there's opportunity to bridge the gap. There's opportunity for resolution. There is opportunity to not have the conversation again and again and again. Hey, like, I feel like that was also part of pre-conscious conflict, a cycle that I would get sucked into because same, like there was no resolution, right? Like there's a lot of invalidation of emotions. There is a lot of invalidation of solutions offered. And at the end of the day, probably a lot of agreeing to disagree. Or like, okay, I'll just talk that one up to not a good time and move on to tomorrow and hope it doesn't happen again. Let's not ever talk about that topic. Life doesn't work that way.
Yeah, then you can just avoid it for forever, which I feel like the universe brings up all of our avoidance stories until we decide that avoidance is not the path that we're going to choose. For me, like moving into that conscious conflict and really being focused on what are we trying to actually achieve required me to reframe and redefine what resolution meant too. Because part of my resolution was somebody agreeing that somebody else was right, like that there was a decision on the rightness made.
was part of what I had as an inaccurate definition of what constituted a resolution. Like, my resolution pre-redefining meant there was somebody who won and there was somebody who submitted, which is crazy. Not at all conscious conflict. Very great for just conflict, but not a conscious one. You know, and when I started leaning into that, redefining what resolution was and what it meant, what I came to was getting out of my head and moving into the way both of us feel at the end of this matters. Like, how we feel like we can move forward, how we feel about the resolution, and even the process of going through the conscious conflict was important. And pre that, I don't know that I cared how we felt. I just wanted a solution and an action to be taken. And because I was so hyper-fixated on needing an action to occur, I was leaving out some of the most important components, which was, one, listening. And, you know, your genius guru in yourself over there, when you ask me, do you ask questions while you're having a conscious conflict? Huh. What a smart thing to do, to ask questions instead of only making statements. So it was a whole reframe even on the action of what the conflict looks like.
And to backtrack just a little bit, what is your definition of a conscious relationship as well? Like, so knowing what you're getting into with conscious conflict, what is a conscious relationship?
Conscious relationship is where the entirety of the being of both people is taken into consideration. And when I say that, I mean mind, body, and soul. How do we move through this in a manner that is in togetherness? We're choosing to move forward as a unit, and all parts of both of our beings matter and should be considered within the relationship.
Which is a win-win paradigm, because what you really were talking about earlier is that win-lose dynamic, which is so easy to get into. Like, I'll sit here and I can, like, throw down a podcast recording or get on this radio show and, you know, talk all about what conscious conflict is. And yeah, I have all of the concepts, but in that moment of being human and you're in the conversation, it can be an internal reflex to go into that place where you feel like you need to defend yourself or explain yourself or be understood, or you're so attached to what it is that you want that that is what has to be the outcome and there isn't room for anything else. And so even you can enter into a conversation very intentionally that is going to be conscious and have resolution, and very quickly get sucked into the self, the ego, the whatever you want to call it, the fight or flight, you know, the knee-jerk reaction of, oh, but actually, this is the most important thing, and everyone winning is no longer as important because I really, really, really have to have this. So that's one of the first things to watch for, is that reaction when you see yourself so attached that it's actually creating a win-lose dynamic. And how do you personally pivot when you catch yourself being in this win-lose dynamic to pull yourself back into that place of consciousness where we're looking for win-win and honoring each person involved, mind, body, and soul?
It's so true. And when I reflect on, you know, all realms of like what a conscious relationship is, in my mind, a conscious relationship truly compels us to share and to listen, to speak and to hear. It creates that safe space where it's a duality. There's a push and there's a pull, but there's the opposite and the equal. Everything is balanced within it. We do both intentionally too.
Is it that easy, though? I mean, it's easy to say, but is it that easy to live out and walk it out?
I think it can be. Have I had it all figured out? No, because there are there are triggers and then emotional responses, right? Like, we talk about this all the time, that if you've had experiences or, you know, items that have created trauma and therefore a trigger, oftentimes you see through what is happening in those, like, 13, 14, 15-year-old eyes for a reference, and then you behave in a mirrored pattern of what you have seen done. So oftentimes we fall back into patterns of, it's easiest to follow suit with how my parents had conflict when those triggers start to arise. So is it that easy all the time? No, of course not, right? Like, we're all human and we all have our flaws and we have good days and we have bad days. But I think the key to that conscious relationship is leaning into both the good and the bad days and making sure that there is space for both and understanding that a conscious relationship isn't always 50-50. Sometimes it's 80-20. Sometimes it's 90-10 the other day. But it's really choosing to move forward with each other and to be supportive no matter where the other one is landing, as long as there's a bounce back and it's not a stay in that same vibe forever.
Yeah, an equal energy exchange. And equal does mm-hmm. not look 50-50 every day.
Exactly.
Or 100-100. I mean, that. I guess it could be debated. It does look 100-100 every day, but the person's 100 each day looks different, right? It's just like which perspective you're choosing to look at it. However, mm-hmm. the principle remains the same, even energy exchange. I find that one really powerful question, if I can keep it top of mind as I'm in a disagreement with someone where I'm not just there with no attachment. Those are easy. When there's no attachment, I can ask questions, tell me more. What do you want from this? What's the solution that you're seeking? What would make you feel good? Like, oh, that's easy. But when you're emotionally in it, right? This is why we spend so much time talking about our emotions and processing our emotions so we can come back to being in our power. But in that place where I am attached, I am activated, and I want something because I'm so human, I like to ask myself, you know, are we on the same team right now? Because really yeah. our consciousness and love, it unites. Like, love in itself is a uniting energy. And so if we can show up in love, then the natural result should be unity or unification.
I love that.
Can be easier said than done.
Say that one more time.
Oh, I was just going to say that also can be easier said than done, you know, because love can wane, ebb and flow. Come in hot, turn kind of cold. But when we can stay in that place of centered love, then love will naturally unite.
Yeah, and I think we also will always find what we look for, right? So if we're looking for solutions, we'll find them. If we're looking for problems, we'll find those too. And no matter what we are looking for, it can always be found and will always be found. So I think the laws of attraction come into this too. So, I mean, one of the keys that I lean into now, especially within my spouse and our relationship, is am I looking for problems or am I looking for solutions? And if I'm looking for problems, putting myself into an adult timeout is really helpful. And just literally saying, I'm not there right now to be able to solution this, and I need about 2 hours or 24 hours. You know, I think everybody has their own barometer and time spans of how long they need before they can move into that solutioning rather than looking for problems. Because I think oftentimes when we feel like it's conflict, we also feel attacked. And when we're attacked, we're humans, mammals, we lean into needing to protect ourselves or go on the defensive. Like, I do believe there's a biology component to that, which is why it's so important to get out of that flight, fright, freeze, fawn, you know, that root chakra response, and move back into consciousness and consciously choosing how we're going to move through it from a heart-centered space too.
Yeah, I love the take space. There's no harm in bringing yourself back to a place where you can return to the topic without get charge accompanying you. That's a power move. So give yourselves permission for that. I feel as though oftentimes, again, being the feeler, the emotional one of the two of us, that the feelings that can arise can be so uncomfortable. I feel as though there has to be resolution right now so that I'm okay. And there's so much more power in finding your okayness in spite of anything that's happening. And I also think that dynamic really speaks to interdependence versus codependence. And so can I find my okayness even though I might feel attacked, I might be really emotionally invested in the conversation or the issue at hand? And finding that okayness really does bring you back out of that reptilian brain response or the fight or flight response and calms the nervous system. You're really okay in this moment. There's a roof over your head. You're not in harm's way. You just ate or you're going to eat, or maybe you need to go drink some water and eat. Maybe that's half of the reason why you're such a crabby cake in the moment. That's also been true for me too. But bringing yourself back into your state of okayness and not needing for there to be an agreement for you to be okay is also going to allow for connection and, you know, growth and expansion. Because you shouldn't have to be mirror images with the people that you're friends with, that your family members, that you're partnered with, whatever the situation is of the conflict. And if you are a mirror with everyone, that creates a pretty boring life. So finding your okayness in the moment, despite whatever you're feeling, or giving your space to come back to your okayness status, especially with those trauma triggers, like you mentioned earlier, when you're in a trauma trigger, it can be really hard and you can bring yourself back to being calmer. But then when you start talking about it again, and you get activated all over again, it's a really good sign that there's something on a deeper level that's at the root and the heart of the matter that might not have anything to do with the other individual that you're talking with. And I also think that's a really huge part of being conscious, is being responsible for your internal environment and how you're responding to a situation. And one last point with the, you know, be on the same team, look for resolution, have it be win-win. The and both thinking philosophy really supports this in huge ways. For some reason, we are so quick to see either or. Like either they can get what they want or I can get what I want. But if you look at it as, okay, this is their value and this is my value, how can we both honor our values, even if they're different, even if they're opposing? What does that look like? Like, explore outside the box thinking, how can we both get what we want?
Yeah, that's so good. And also, like, you know, if you guys have been following us, you know that we talk about the Enneagram all the time. So one thing that really has come to my own emotional awareness is that as a seven, I didn't always view something as being conflict that many other Enneatypes did view as very aggressive, very conflicting, and also certainly they didn't view my statements or questions, for that matter, as trying to resolve. They felt like an attack, and it took me a bit to get to a place where I could recognize when they felt like it was a conflict. And as soon as I started to have that awareness, then I can move it in from conflict to conscious conflict, to where we can move it into resolution, even with people that you don't have those intimate friendship relationships or any type of relationship with. When you start to really get that inner barometer, those inner guidance systems really starting to work for you instead of against you, and even recognizing when you're triggered can often be exactly what you need to move out of it and go, hey, that right there is mine. That has nothing to do with the other person or the other, you know, individual in this conversation. But also sometimes those triggers, because it's not always convenient when you're in the midst of a conversation or conflict with somebody that you can say, give me about 20 minutes. I'm going to go ahead and release this trauma. Let me go ahead and work through this loss trauma or this violence trauma, and I'll get back to you. We can't always do that, right? Like, sometimes we have to have a conversation with somebody to where we can't necessarily do the energetics to release the trauma, but what you can do is say, hey, I acknowledge it's there, I acknowledge it's mine, and I will prioritize it as soon as I move into a space of where I can at the end of this conversation. But for right now, source, guidance systems, help me be conscious as I'm moving into this conversation with this person and see them for what they're saying and moving into external of what that trauma lens is trying to tell me. That has done wonders for me, even to include a conversation that I had with a coworker today where it was really clear to me that she felt like I was out to get her. And this was something that had lived in her mind space for 5 years. And we had only worked together for 1 week prior to this new project. I hadn't spent any mind space on thinking about her or what was going on. But as soon as she came to me and was very, very, like, irritated, but also you could tell anxiety was on the high, and all I said was, take a minute, take a breath, take a drink of water. I see you. I want to hear you out, and I'm invested in resolving this however we can. And I'm sorry that I've ever made you feel like you need to be on the defensive with me, because I never meant to that or intended for that. But take a moment and recenter yourself, because we can move into this in a really safe manner. Like, you don't have to be on the offensive. I'm invested in solutioning this for the best of both of us. And it was literally like the snap of the fingers could shift. Did I have to agree with her thoughts or her opinions? Old me would have been like, how did you get there? Did the voices in your head say that to you? Because I certainly have never done anything to you. Show me the evidence of where I've done things to you. I would have wanted to prove my rightness. And I had no intention of that. And when you move into that conscious conflict space where you are no longer invested in being right or being validated or vindicated or seen as the just one, it instantly releases the tension and also the fire behind it. Like, what are we doing? What are we trying to do? Do you need something from me? I'm willing to give it to you. I just need to know what it is, because I don't know what your needs are. You need to tell me, and then I can help you. And it's just interesting how just little things do create that safe space for somebody else to feel safe enough to express themselves, in how quickly a conflict can be a conscious resolution too, to where both parties can be seen, heard, and can choose then to move through whatever that is in a manner that is honestly the best fit for both of them.
Yeah, I really appreciated you bringing up, well, so many things. There's lots of great points in what you just shared from your current experience, recent experience. But talking about the situations where you don't have the time to walk away, to take 20 minutes, to take 2 hours, when those situations are front and center, there are so many ways that you can calm your nervous system, though. And that's one of the cool things that's included in the Stronger Together platform, because we're offering like 20 different ways that you can calm your nervous system and help process your emotions. And there are certain techniques that are super inconspicuous that
people, especially if you're in a disagreement with someone and your arms are crossed anyway, are not even going to realize that you're doing anything at all to calm yourself or center yourself. And then, of course, the breathing, you know, just simply taking really deep breaths will calm your nervous system. And there's eye movements that you can do as well. And especially if you're at a table or desk, there's a whole bunch of tapping that you can do. And the other person will be completely unaware. So if those tools would help support you, you can definitely jump into the Stronger Together community to find them. I cannot attest to the fact of how much it's been a game changer in situations where I've wanted to flee. Much less a fighter than I am a fleer, but you can't always just jet on out of the situation. So let's talk about thinking and feeling, what I like to refer to as the thinking and feeling paradox. And I love this conversation for the aspect that you get both sides of the coin. Esther will tell you all about what the thinker wants in a conflict, and I can tell you all about what a feeler wants in a conflict. And hopefully that will help. Like, we are often attracted to the opposite. So if we're a thinker, we partner with a feeler and vice versa, but we don't necessarily speak the same language, so to speak. So what I have experienced with thinkers, being partnered with a thinker, he is amazing at just wants to find the problem. Let's just go straight to the solution. I don't know what those emotions are. I'm not sure what their purpose is. And it seems like a waste of energy to do anything with those. So here are 16 solutions. Which one are you going to pick? And let's go. Let's just move on. And as a feeler, I feel completely invalidated for my feelings. My feelings are like, but what about me? But what about how I feel? Or I feel so intensely that, as we talk about all the time here, when you're steeped in emotion, you do not have full access to your thinking, rational, logical brain. And so there is an amount of emotional processing that I will need to do to be able to meet in the space of the 16 solution options that I've just been presented, a whole smorgasbord of options of solutions. And none of them seem like they're even doable because the feeling is so powerful. And so in that dynamic, everyone loses because the thinker had 16 amazing solutions that I just rejected, and the feeler feels completely invalidated for how they feel, and all they really want is like, hey, that must be hard for you. I can see you're upset. For me personally, like, just give me a hug. And so that is kind of the nuts and bolts of the thinking-feeling paradox that I believe most people find themselves in. Is there anything else that you observe, Esther?
So many things, right? Like, I'm not laughing because this is funny, but I'm laughing because of, like, it's so true. Like, can we please skip out from a head point, right? Non-feeler. Can we please just skip over all of that stuff and come to what we're going to do, the action? What are we going to do to solve it? And how very invalidating that is when I look back on that, you know, and to the point now, like within my relationships, especially with those feelers, you know, today with my colleague, she is more than likely an Enneagram 4. And the simple phrase of just saying, I'm so sorry I made you feel that way, which it being genuine, because not that I ever intended or did anything, none of that mattered, that I didn't intend to hurt her feelings. The fact is that she felt hurt and her feelings are valid. So me validating the fact that she felt a certain way, regardless of the actions, was one of the simplest things that was heartfelt, of course, that shifted the dynamic between us. And then also, you know, once you know those Enneagrams, that four wanted to me to understand, well, she wanted me to feel the full extent of her emotional responses to everything. So I said, I really want you to feel heard and understood and whatever you're needing in this moment. So I want to get where you're at. So please, if you need to elaborate on how you feel, take as much time as you need. I'm all ears. And she did, honestly. You know, so like so simple to just let the feelers go first. You go first. Let me validate the fact that you feel a certain way, whether I think it's justified or not, valid or not, doesn't even matter anymore. I want your feelings to be validated because they're yours and nobody gets to tell you how to feel except you. So you go first.
I can remember the first time you said to me something about, well, I can remember it so well I can't even repeat it verbatim. Look at me go. But you said something to the extent that I don't understand why you feel that way, but the fact that you do feel that way is important to me. So let's talk about
Look
it.
Look how far I've come. Look at how far I've come.
Right. I'm like, I'm not really sure what to do with that. Like, I think the hamster in my wheel in my brain short-circuited and, like, had a heart attack and just died in its cage. It was like, wait, I'm invalidated, but I'm validated, so we're neutral. I don't even know. Okay, let me just talk about my feelings. I'll just skip all of that.
Yeah, it was probably literally like, I have no clue why you feel that way, but I'm sorry you feel that way, so here we are. It was probably absolutely ridiculous where I was like, I don't get it. And now, like, I realize that the I don't get it part doesn't matter. It's my intention to try to get it, right? Like, I intentionally try to meet you wherever you are. And that goes for everybody that I'm having an interaction with. Like, I want you to feel seen, heard, validated, understood, whatever you're looking for. I want to be able to show up for you. And no longer does it matter if I 100% get why we got to where we are, as long as we can get somewhere else at the end, because I do need a resolution at the end of where we're going. So then the, like, thinker in me comes to it of, okay, now me. Got you, now me. How can we get me where I need to be now of what are we going to do going forward? You know, like going forward, are we going to take a different path? Is there something that we can both do to meet each other differently? What needs to occur? You know, all of those things. And from the thinker, my heart's desire is to be understood. Please understand me and where I was coming from and my intent.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a paradox, right, to see how our different processors work, you know, and when we consciously move into that of wanting to get it, wanting to feel that other side, so much easier than just leaning into, I don't even understand why this matters. Well, it matters.
Okay,
it's
Sorry, please finish. I thought you were done. It matters because of the relationship.
It matters because the relationship matters, or it matters because all relationships matter because we are all part of one consciousness. So if I don't care about you, I don't care about a piece of me as well. And that is how disassociated selves happen. So no matter who the individual is, they matter because we're all a piece of the same consciousness. That's my perspective.
Yes, I think that we should talk about dissociated self and what that means exactly. I also want to come back to thinkers and asking a question, because I think that's a powerful sentiment for our listeners out there, but we do have a question, so I want to jump into that really quick so that we have space and time. Michelle in Ontario asked the question, and Michelle, if you want to call in for energetic support around this, feel free to jump on the line. But she asked, how do I overcome my terror around any conflict as it triggers my trauma from childhood abuse? And I love that you asked this because so many people experience. Do you want to start, SJ, or do you want me to go?
Yeah, either way. I can lean into it, and then you can take it from there, too, as well. When we're talking about that fear response and the terror that comes up, such strong emotions, right, behind that. When you feel it, they're super, super intense, and we feel them at the intensity of the age that we were when they occurred. So we bring that forward, and then our processing centers, the way we think through the situation has that same intensity, even in adulthood. And one of the ways to release that is to really get into those trapped selves, that trauma response, and make it a safe place for that inner child, inner teenager, inner adult, wherever the trauma happened, to be able to be heard, seen, felt, all of the things, and then provide the safety to where their expression can come through, the things that needed to be said or done, the shame, blame, or guilt that needs to be released from the things done or not done can all occur, so that we essentially can make amends with ourselves and release those trapped selves that we have compartmentalized and blocked off through the trauma, so that they can reintegrate with our being, so that we're functioning with the entirety of our being and not just pieces of it. So that's kind of where my modality moves into, is helping to reintegrate those trapped selves in a manner to where they feel safe. Because when your inner landscape feels safe, you see safety in your external landscape too. Because the inner landscape and what you see in the external landscape are mirror reflections of each other. And they're always clues on the items that our internal world could use a hand up with.
And coming at it from same angle, different terminology, I would encourage you to heal the trauma. Heal the trauma from the childhood so you don't live in the trigger. A lot of times our terror phobia that comes into play, and we'll notice it around certain situations. It's like if you go to the terror or however you experience the conflict, and you have a row of dominoes, and say there are 20 different dominoes. If you go in and you want to address the terror, you might be knocking down like 4 of those dominoes. But if you go in and say, hey, I'm going to heal this trauma, I'm going to show up for myself, I'm going to honor myself, I'm going to love myself because I went through some really heavy stuff in my childhood, and I deserve to not carry that any further. I deserve to not be able, you know, I deserve to be able to live my life and to not have triggers that remind me of that all the time and throw my nervous system back into fight or flight and my safe. Then the trauma healing will knock down all 20 dominoes. And not only will it help you find peace within the conflict, you're actually going to find that a lot of other things are going to shift with it that you didn't realize was connected. The other thing about abuse, and it's not specifically what your question is asking, but those of us who experience abuse in childhood turn those strategies inward on ourselves. And so we repeat abusive patterns that we don't even realize is abuse. Like it's just how life is because it's how life has always been. And that's really the value of having someone hold space for you and work with someone who has experienced healing the trauma so you can really get in there and have personal freedom and liberation at a whole new level. Now, if you do want to dive into working this on your own with what you can do, Michelle, I would really encourage you to utilize the Natural Bio-Distressing tutorial video that's on the News for the Soul page under our profile. Utilize that tapping and also work with affirmations, training your brain around what your definition of conflict is, like we talked about in the very beginning of this episode. That the conflict that you experienced as a child is not what adult version of conflict is, and that you have full agency and autonomy over those interactions. And so when conflict arises, it can be opportunity, it can be faith, it can be growth, it can be expansion, it can be positive. So if you want to come at this from solo work of just seeing the shifts and changes that you make on your own over time, those would be the two best tools that I would recommend you diving into.
Yeah, and as we're talking about those trapped selves and those pieces that need to reintegrate the disassociated selves, that's actually our focus for the Stronger Together group coaching community next month as well, which occurs on the first, second, and fourth Thursdays of every month at 7 p.m. Central Time. So if you're looking to get a little bit more intimate with that knowledge without individual sessions, but also getting not just access to those live sessions with us, but also that intervention library that Janessa is talking about of those tools that can really help you reset the nervous system and move into that. All of that is included within the Stronger Together community. You can find those links on our pages, too, at fiercelyradiantsoul.com and crystallinecurrents.com as well, if that's something that seems in alignment with you.
So let us know if you have any follow-up questions, Michelle. Thank you so much for sending that in. It was such a great question, and I know that so many people out there listening can relate and are living their own experience of that. So looping back around to dissociated selves, please tell us, what is dissociation or dissociated selves in the context you're referring to?
Essentially, when those traumatic events happen, we can wall off pieces of ourselves that maybe we couldn't handle the situation that was going on, so we'll create those memory blocks, or there are pieces of ourselves that maybe feel shameful to us, or we feel guilty about, or we blame for why it happened to us. So we essentially wall off little pockets of ourself within our being, and then we stop utilizing any of the energies, but also the factories, the processing factories that are contained, and we essentially have no energy flowing through some of those pieces of ourselves, or it is almost like a short circuit to where it fritzes, the trigger happens, where you get lit on fire because of that trapped self. And then you get derailed into that trigger of what happened back when the trauma occurred. So you see that person as perhaps the individual that participated in the trauma, and you connect with them or respond to them in a manner that is kind of that same age frame as well as when that traumatic experience happened. Those trapped selves can create, within my modalities, there's quite a bit of research around how it can create physical disease within the body. So you'll start to see certain things, like if there's a lot of anger, perhaps breast cancer comes up, dependent upon where those trapped selves fell, what happened around the traumatic experience. But energy is present within everything, and it can affect all levels of the being, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And you can see each of those items trickle down into that physical manifestation if we don't acknowledge and reintegrate some of that disassociation or trapped selves.
Yeah, and how you realize in the moment you're dissociating a few things, you know, if you know there's conflict, someone is talking to you, or maybe it's escalated and they're yelling at you and you're not actually present and you're not hearing it, and you might be in your mind like, I can't believe this is happening, or you're having an out-of-body experience, I can't believe this is happening. Those are clues to you that there is something more happening within your psyche than what you're actually able to cope with and process in the here and now. And so that is a protective strategy of like removing yourself a step from the situation for safety. However, oftentimes when that happens, there is the trauma effect, the fragmentation, the dissociation, there's so many words depending upon what modality you're using around that occurs, that a deeper level of healing needs to happen other than just, okay, let's find the solution to the situation now. So I think it was really valuable to touch on that. Although we're moving to the top of the hour, so I want to go back just really quickly, this other topic I said I wanted to loop around to, about asking thinkers a question. I know SJ alluded to this and talked about this some earlier. I have found with being partnered with a thinker that sometimes, even in their process of finding a solution, they don't necessarily want you to be finding the solution for them. And I found it really beneficial to ask my spouse, how do you want me to show up for you right now? Like, do you want me just to listen? Do you want me to actively offer some possibilities and solutions? Do you want to work the mindset around it? Like, what do you want right now? And I have found that it seems to be there's some level of processing with words for thinkers that needs to happen. And until they reach that place of expelling through their words what it is that they feel they need to say and get off their chest, while they may be actively also talking about solutions, they're not actually ready to move into action. So all of the words is sort of this contemplation phase of getting ready to take action on the solution. And so if you are a feeler and all of this thinking stuff is not innate for you, just like the feelers need space to feel, thinkers also need some space to think through the situation. And SJ can share more. I'm sure you can articulate it much more accurately than I can.
I mean, I feel like that was pretty good. Is it all head points that need to almost verbal diarrhea the entire thing before they can really process it? Or is it just the sevens, Janessa?
I feel like sixes really benefit from it as well. And I feel like fives are the wild card because they're so introverted.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's
a lot of their processing can be done internally versus externally. But then if you have a four wing or a strong enough six wing, sometimes that'll push them into being more expressive.
Yeah, that makes sense. If I was where I went, I wonder if it's true for them. I have a lot of experience with sixes and certainly sevens because I am one. And, like, so true. Like, I just have to get it out. And I can't get it out in my head, which is probably sounds weird because we're the head points, right? We're the thinkers. We should be able to think it through. I think it through with an external expulsion of my words. And she's so right when she says that oftentimes we do not want you to help a solution. I would love for you to hold space and be present most of the time to hear the things that I'm saying. And then when I'm done with it, because I love Janessa when I'm going off on one of my seven tangents and she's just like, just get it out. Go do you get it out. And then there will be a brief silence. And then she'll say, so are you ready to work the energy? Yes, now I am. But if she asked me that question before I was able to vomit all of it out through words, no, absolutely not. No. But yeah, like it's that outpouring of the words. And honestly, like I will talk to myself to get it out. If nobody is there, I have to say it out loud though. And I think there's a strong connection. Like I've followed, of course, the head points and all of the points for that matter, connection between the throat chakra and the head points too, and how they need to literally expel externally what's going through their mind in order to process and then lean into, now I'm ready to move to my heart and actually process it. But it's really difficult for us to bypass that throat chakra and just go straight to the heart. Like, that's hard for me. I have to have the throat, then the heart. It's a sequence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what, you know, mastering being human, that's what it's all about. Like, we're not all made exactly the same. So it's figuring out you and your own flow and your own rhythm. And that's exactly what we're doing in Stronger Together this month. And our next call is tomorrow. And we would love for you guys to come join this community where you have a powerful community showing up for you, always having your back, helping you move your mountain. And support at your fingertips in the Voxer community. I mean, think about how would it feel for you to be calmer and confident in handling anything life brings your way? Or when you realize you're in a trauma trigger, oh, well, it's just another day and it's just another trauma and I have the tools to move beyond it. So I'm not getting caught in the same loop over and over and over. And those are just the tiniest smidgen of benefits you will get from joining this, getting in on the live healing calls, getting in on the live coaching calls, and having all of those tools at your fingertips. SJ shared with you how to find those on any of the platforms, News for the Soul, her website, my website, Crystalline Currents, or Fiercely Radiant Soul. Next week, I will be here with another amazing guest. She's an astrologer, a healer. She is just really a spiritually aware, fierce soul. I am so pumped to have her on and have a conversation with her. Her name is Tani. She'll be back with me next week at the same time. And until then, friends, keep your eyes wide open.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.